Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:48 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is November 11th. Well, we had shenanigans again in the Chinese market today, with the regulator stepping in and introducing a range of different regulations, both to contain speculation in the convertible bond market, which has a T+0 settlement, so it encouraged a lot of retail speculation in the bond market because it's not as regulated as the stock market, which is rather odd. It's certainly not something you'd see in other markets, although perhaps the kind of sales of reverse convertibles that were going on in Italy ahead of the financial crisis might come close. But the more important point is that they're looking at clamping down on the potential for monopolies. So Tencent has now posted this really rather large downside weekly key reversal. And there is a clear intention by the Xi administration to rein in the power of the I guess what might be considered oligarchs, but I don't think oligarch is really the correct word, because just because you have money in China does not mean that you have power. And I think that is now being made abundantly clear to some of the more successful entrepreneurs. So Tencent is one of the biggest companies in China, with WeChat Pay being one of the most successful financial sector companies, with WeChat itself being the primary social media platform. And then, of course, there are other aspects to the business. They have a massive games sector as well, and then also retail operations. And the government is looking at the power that all of these various income streams represents for an individual company, and is reining it in to ensure that they toe the line and that they are under the direct control of the government. Now, this is important, because when we start to think about what kind of business model does China have, it's not correct to say that it is a communist apparatus, because there is a capacity, at least, for private enterprise. It's not capitalist either, because there isn't the potential for free movement of capital and trade. It's extraordinarily heavily regulated. So what we can really think about is that this is much more fascist in nature. In other words, that private enterprise is tolerated provided it is in complete servitude to the stated aims of the controlling government. The controlling government has got clear global aspirations in terms of control and demanding of either, I guess the other way of thinking about it is that historically, when you had a massive empire, they were entitled, or they enforced upon their neighbors the complete servitude. And that is really what China is demanding. So it does raise questions about the ability to invest there. Of course, there are higher returns available, because there's an additional risk, just in exactly the same way that Russia's market has been the kind of place where there have been outsized returns available. But in order to capture those returns, one has to also absorb the risk that you will be eventually taken out of the market. But when we think about some of the other companies, the other social media companies, for example, well, Meituan is certainly one of those, and it has also pulled back in a dynamic manner in the Hong Kong listing. But then when we think about, well, how did all that translate into trading on Wall Street? Well, it was rather interesting, because Alibaba had priced a lot of it in the last few days, and it wasn't really down in a very dynamic manner today, but it is certainly pulling back. But that might arguably be because of the pulled and financial IPO, rather than this additional round of regulation. Then when we think about other bigger companies, or companies that may compete with Alibaba, for example, well, JD.com was actually in positive territory in here today. Then the education sector, which is obviously completely separate, remains still in an uptrend. What it suggests is that investors are willing to look past some of the longer term threats and more are looking at individual companies and their prospects. So people haven't been shocked enough yet in order to really chastise them from investing in China. And of course, the strength of the renminbi and the relative yield differential have been some of the most important factors behind that determination to invest in China. But the renminbi was weaker today, and it does look likely that it will unwind its overbought condition relative to the dollar. We also saw that some of the larger technology companies rebounded in here today, and the NASDAQ 100 was up in a reasonably robust manner. It has not quite unwound the downside key from 3 days ago, but it hasn't really been following through on the downside either. When we think about where the risk resides in the technology sector, it's less in companies like Apple, and Apple was up in a reasonably robust manner in here today, or really in companies like Microsoft, because they already have really quite solid income streams, and this whole range over the last few months doesn't look like much more than a reversion back to the mean. But then when we look at, you know, companies like Zoom Media, then they're much more leveraged to interest rates. The share was in positive territory today, but again, not in an especially dynamic manner. Shopify had come all the way back down to test the lower side of its range, and now it is beginning to at least offer some evidence of steadying here. It does have at least some scope to do better, but this looks more toppish than we've seen, particularly because it's really the first significant consolidation following what had been an incredibly accelerated advance. So it really does have to hold the region of the trend mean and continue to pause around this psychological $1,000 level in order to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Then when we look at the outlook for stock markets overall, well, it's still very likely that we're going to continue to see additional stimulative action. The S&P 500 is pausing in the region of its previous peak. It's been ranging now for 2 months. And we definitely saw some buying the dip activity as it came back towards the region of the trend mean immediately ahead of the US presidential election. And of course, that is still a source of potential volatility, but I think it is probably all done now except for the shouting, and there is likely to be plenty of shouting. When we then think about the oil market, it was in positive territory in here today. People, I think, are beginning to think about what will a recovery look like in 2021. On the one hand, there is a rising number of cases around the USA and Europe right now. So people are a little reticent to start thinking about recovery, and there are active bets about a W-shaped recovery, that we've had the rebound and there is fear that new lockdowns will be introduced in the USA in sympathy with what happened in Europe with their rising number of cases. But what I think is most acutely absent from the discussion is that the number of deaths is nowhere near where it was back in March. And that is despite the fact that we're finding a lot more of the cases. The number of undiscovered cases is obviously less today than it was in March, because in March we were only testing clearly symptomatic people. So any comparison with the number of tests today versus then does not make sense. You need to be able to compare apples to apples, and that is just not happening right now. The only way to truly look at it is to have a responsible way of counting deaths, and even that is open to significant reinterpretation. Oil didn't quite hold its advance in here today, and now the question is it going to hold to the $40 level? When we think about the outlook for the energy sector overall, well, they have got this significant headwind from the potential for additional regulation. I did start to see, though, some headlines talking about refineries moving over to producing clean diesel. And that could be a significant change for the conventional energy sector. And it would obviously be very beneficial for a lot of the stock of diesel vehicles that are still in existence. The one thing about diesel is that they do tend to last a very long time, which is the really what the entire basis for the value proposition is for owning one. But Royal Dutch Shell has at least broken the sequence of lower rally highs. Well, with a return to at least some speculative interest, I think people are beginning to think about what exactly is it that we can expect from governments. 10-year Treasury yields are at 97 basis points. 1% is a very big Rubicon in terms of the way of thinking about the market. We are starting to see that economies are beginning to recover, and they should recover more next year. The Continuous Commodity Index didn't quite hold its strong open in here today, but it does look like we're going to see this index push on to new recovery highs. And that does beg the question that when are we going to see additional stimulative action? I think it's inevitable that we're going to need to see stimulative action, but it's on the back of the potential for an inflationary shock. If we get a V-shaped recovery, which I think is likely, there is an extraordinary amount of pent-up demand that is just waiting to hit the market when lockdowns are eventually contained. There was some speculation about just how effective the Pfizer vaccine is, and part of the reason for that speculation is because the CEO sold a big chunk of his stock as soon as news came out. So that's not especially encouraging, and the share has come back down to unwind more than half of the initial breakout. There is a lot of trading around with the data that's coming out from these vaccine trials, but it does look increasingly likely that there will be vaccines. I remain very much of the opinion that it doesn't really matter whether they work or not, because the vast majority of people have very little to fear from the coronavirus in the first place. And even the flu vaccine from last year was only 50% effective, and yet it was recommended that everybody get it anyway. So these are, I think, important and significant issues. There is still likely to be, a very clear V-shaped recovery next year, because governments will use any excuse to remove social distancing, because the costs of containing this virus are extraordinary by any measure. Then when we do start to see transactions taking place once more and people getting back into the run of their normal lives, well, then that's when inflationary pressures start to rise. That's when demand for oil, for example, would really start to kick back in. And we've perhaps seen just a little bit of the rally that could take place as a result of that. Then when we think about, well, how are people positioning themselves? Well, there's certainly a lot of interest in gold, and for obvious reasons, because if we can look at the trillions of dollars in cash that have been printed over the course of the last 6 months, when the number of economic transactions rises, then that has clear inflationary issues. The more the yield curve steepens, then the more likely it is that we're going to have better margins for the financial sector and more speculative interest. It may even result in banks starting to lend again, and then that would really be a very inflationary aspect altogether. One thing that, just when we think about the capacity of banks to lend, it is worth considering that US banks in particular are in much healthier shape today than they were in 2008, 9, 10, and 11. And that does give them at least the potential to do better from here. And they do have the capacity to lend. Now, they probably don't have a lot of surety right now as to exactly what the quality of the credits that they'd be lending to is because of the coronavirus. But that'll change next year. When social distancing measures are relaxed, then there will be the ability to lend again, and then that should help with interest margins. Then when we also think about how is the global market going to respond, well, it's unlikely that governments are going to be able to pay back the massive amounts of money that they've borrowed. They have to try and inflate their debt away. Well, I think that is the primary bull market hypothesis behind gold. And then when it comes to Bitcoin, we have the limited supply argument as well. Now, Bitcoin continues to pause around the 16,000 level, but it paused around the 15,000 level, and it paused around 14,000. So it's not particularly surprising that we see a pause around this level. The most important thing is that it has clearly broken out to new recovery highs. Then when we think about Ethereum, it is right on the cusp of the upper side of this evolving first step above the base. So there is something of a sequence. And the last time we saw a sequence like this was with gold. Gold prices broke out, and it's very easy to see that when we just look at the charts. Gold broke out in 2019. Then when we think about the gold miners, they broke out in 2020, and they were just on the cusp of breaking out in 2019, but then came back down. And then when we think about silver, well, that also broke out in 2020, but it broke out after the bigger gold miners. The defining characteristic of some of those bigger gold miners is that they pay dividends. The defining characteristic of the junior gold miners is that they don't generally pay dividends. So that broke out even later and looks like it's putting in a first step above the base right now. Well, when you start going further down the speculative ladder, then you're looking at the fact that the explorers haven't broken out yet. Well, we know that Bitcoin is at a new recovery high. We know that Ethereum is just in the process of potentially at least completing a first step above the base. But then a lot of the altcoins, they're nowhere near doing either of those things. They're still within their base formations. And then there are obviously isolated cases of some doing much better than others. But as a grouping, then they haven't yet been able to break up out of their base formations. So in that regard, there is a clear commonality in the sequencing of events that when gold broke out, it immediately got people interested, but it also created demand for more speculative ways of participating and certainly looking for leverage to gold. It's, I think, quite likely that we're then also going to see increasing demand for leverage to Bitcoin, and Ethereum is the obvious answer to that, and then subsequently from the altcoins. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.